Till next time, I'm Dimae Roberts. We're going to go out with music, actually the theme song from Romeo and Juliet, the film, so enjoy.
Up next on KBOO Radio Zine, Emily Young speaks to author Elizabeth Fournier about her new book, The Green Burial Guidebook, a comprehensive look at environmentally conscious burial practices. All of these KBOO programs this morning were made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, please go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Facing America's Nuclear Legacy, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and the Pacific Islands, on Monday, August 6th at 6 p.m. at the Japanese American Historical Plaza in Portland. Facing America's Nuclear Legacy will remember the victims of the August 6th and August 9th, 1945 atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Speakers will discuss the lasting impacts of decades of nuclear weapons testing, the nuclear weapons situation between the United States and North Korea, the toxic cycle of nuclear weapons production, and more. Again, that's Facing America's Nuclear Legacy, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and the Pacific Islands, on Monday, August 6th at 6 p.m. at the Japanese American Historical Plaza at Northwest NATO Parkway and Cooch Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hello, my name is Emily Young, and my guest today is Elizabeth Fournier, eco-mortician and former mayor of Boring, featured in Glamour and People magazine. Elizabeth's life's journey has led her to making this more of an acceptable thing to talk about. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Elizabeth is a former KBOO volunteer who has gone out into the world and made real good, and she's doing good work. And one of the good works that she's done is written a book, The Green Burial Guidebook, Everything You Need to Plan an Affordable, Environmentally Friendly Burial. I can understand that you're doing green burials, but why? What got you into it in the first place? How did you get into green burials?
I've been out in the country at my repurposed goat barn funeral home for about 13 years now. And after being there for about 1 year, I received a phone call from a family, and they really wanted to do things in a way that I had not been prepared to help them. They wanted to keep their loved one at home. They wanted to have their loved one kept in the intentional community, buried on the property, and they didn't really want a funeral director to be hands-on, but they wanted some guidance. And right away, I thought, well, I better call some people just to figure out, to make sure how I can best help them. So after calling Clackamas County and talking to the land planning and zoning and running the address by them and asking questions, I found that they said, well, there's really nothing on the books that says we can't do this. Why don't you go ahead and call the health department? I spoke with them. I went on to Vital Records. I called the mortuary board. And I really didn't get a lot of answers other than, well, there's nothing written down that says that we can't do this. So I thought, well, that's two thumbs up for me. So went ahead. We took care of everything. And that service was amazing. We had everybody participate exactly the way they needed to. And from everything, from the fish that the sons caught on the river that we feasted on, to us having a bowl of prayers that we were singing, holding hands, to just taking turns with the shovel. Everything about the day was so spectacular. As I drove home, I thought, this is why I've been called to be a part of this industry. So little by little, more families would call and say, hey, are you that person in the country that helps families take care of this? And I proudly said, yes, I am. And we just went from there, and it's just been magnificent.
When did people as a whole move away from the normal burials? I mean, when did we start embalming and all these things? How come this is going on?
Well, it's what we call nowadays is we call modern burial. What we really think about when you say traditional burial is something that we all did about 150 years ago, back early into civilization. Somebody would pass away, and we would take our time to be reverent. We would go ahead and either bathe them, dress them. The religious person would come say prayers. Somebody would make food. We would keep our loved one at our home. And then we would go ahead and bring them either to the churchyard or out to the backyard for a burial space. And we would move on. What happened was a civil war showed up. And with that, we wanted our boys who had left home, who had fought in wars, to come back to the home so we could pay our respects and have them in our homes and our churches and buried locally. In order to get them back, we really needed some sort of preservation to happen to these bodies to get them on trains. So this was the advent of embalming, and this is something that doctors started. So with doctors having this in their back pocket, they decided that money could be made. People wanted to learn this practice and this trade, so that started the mortuary schools. Of course, boys went to schools back then, so we had boys as morticians, and then we had funeral parlors. And rather than having the local guy down the street make your casket and being buried in the churchyard, all of a sudden business came of this. And we were selling goods and services at the funeral home, expensive caskets and makes and models and the hearse and then the embalming practice. And then cemeteries got involved a little bit and said, hey, rather than use the churchyard or your backyard, we'll make these beautiful, green, pristine memorial parks. And you can come spend some money here. So that's where we are as a culture, and that's what we consider traditional burial, when the reality is traditional burial is just like we did with the Oregon Trail. We stopped our buggy. We had that person get off. We prepared a space. We said our moment of goodbye. We broke into that fresh, crusty bread, and off we went.
Not only have we moved away from nature in those ways, but it's also we've moved away from death. I mean, just having death in our homes. They used to make hair wreaths and things like that. People have moved so far away from being involved with their own death or even admitting that we have death, you know, around us. It just seems to be taken out of our hands. The van comes and they're gone, and I don't need to worry about it anymore, Elizabeth. I'm wondering about, in reading this book, which I'm going to go ahead and tell you, I thoroughly enjoyed. I did enjoy this book about death. It was like it read like a Ripley's Believe It or Not to me. In other words, there were facts, and it was full of wonderful things, and the idea of planning for your own death. Why is it so alien to us?
Well, women were originally the layers of the dead, and what that meant was when somebody passed away, the women, kinfolk, and community members would come into the house, and they would bathe that person, and they'd prepare food, and we'd have them in the front parlor. And it was this really nice, lovely, hands-on, gentle experience. We would go ahead out in the garden, get our wildflowers, and we'd make our hair wreaths, and we would take time. And then once we were ready, we would have everybody join us with the cart, and we'd have them go out the front parlor door and then go on and have our procession. So over time, that's changed quite a bit, because most funeral homes, as time went on, would be called right away, and that undertaker would toddle off to the home in his tall black hat, and he'd bring his crepe ribbons that he'd put on the door that would let people know, hey, don't bother this family. They're in mourning. Leave them alone. Come to the funeral parlor. We'll have visiting hours. And so everything became very sanitized. And if you wanted to spend time with your loved one, you come to the funeral home during calling hours, during that 1 hour. And that's when your mourning needs to be, ready or not, and then you go home. So it's a little bit isolated. It's taking out of the hands of the family, and I think people are starting to realize that we have final rights, and we have many rights, and there's only 10 states across the United States of America that say that you cannot act as your own funeral home, and you have to turn your loved one over to an established parlor someplace.
What if I don't have a space to bury my dead? If I don't have, I'm not out in the country in a rural area. You discuss the options in the book. I'm going to pretend like I don't know. I really don't want to, you know, have you recite the whole book here so that people don't have to go out and buy the book. There's a lot of information in this book. I don't think we could possibly get all to it, although it does read fantastically easy for what it is. It's not a difficult book to read. And as well as your other books, I'm just going to mention Elizabeth also is the author of The Green Reaper, where she does memoirs, and she talks about how she became a mortician in the first place and her life, another wonderful book, honestly. And your first book, which I have not read, so I can't flagrantly flat. For all I know, it totally is awful. Mm. But it is called The 101 Blind Dates.
Yeah, it's called All Men Are Cremated Equal, My 77 Blind Dates. And that was a slog through 77 blind dates. However, I was a mortician at the time. Not really green burial-ish.
Nothing to do with green burial, but you are an author and you've got these books out. This, to me, what was fascinating is it's annotated, for crying out loud. You've got almost as much annotation in it. It has academic side to it, but on the other side, it is very readable and it is very much entertainment in an odd way. But you talk about death cafes, and a friend mentioned that to me earlier today, death cafes where people get together and talk about death. And she said that one started in 2014, so I guess they've been around a while. Have you attended some of these, and what did you do at them in your special field with your special knowledge?
Yeah, so Death Cafe is something that started in London, because in England they are much more adverse to the culture we have now. They actually have green burials that have been around for a long time. They call them garden burials, and they have death cafes, and they really like the idea of sipping tea and eating crumpets and talking about death and dying and life expenditures and aging, and they're just a lot more comfortable with this sort of thing. So we've had some death cafes here in Portland, and it's just a group of people who will meet up at either a cafe or, the first Unitarian Church has hosted them. There's another community house in Northeast that's done this. And these are all organized through whomever. There is no certain rights to this. You can start your own death cafe if you want. And ultimately, it's a real safe space for people to come and to discuss their thoughts. There's no salespeople. When I go, I don't even mention that I'm in the funeral industry. I just like to, again, do my own talking, too, and explore my own ideas of mortality. There is some organization where there are some topics, and there is a bit of an introduction and a bit of a speaker. But ultimately, people really get to sit comfortably and dialogue and get ideas of what they want to do and really have their voices heard. And it's not a grief therapy group, but it really gets us talking about death as something that is out there and is real, and it tries to make it as unscary as possible.
Well, I've known quite a few people who've had extended illnesses or illnesses of one kind or another, and it's when it comes to the time before death and the time after death, I was surprised at the resources that were available that I found out about in your book. I was also surprised at the many different ways of being buried that there are and how you go into the logistics. And again, very well researched. And yet it doesn't read as something dry like that. It doesn't read for as much information as you're given. But you really get into the numbers of the, for instance, the carbon footprint between the new cremation as opposed to the old cremation, the new cremation being liquefaction with lye. Is that right?
Yeah.
Something like that. But when you talk about the death cafes and having this be more accessible, somebody might think of goth. You know, they might think, a bunch of grim reapers. You know, Elizabeth has been dubbed the Green Reaper. Who dubbed you the Green Reaper?
It's just been something families have said, because I'll come to the backyard and I'll help them prepare the grave spaces. And rather than say, the Grim Reaper is here, it's just been the Green Reaper, because I'm in nature and I have a little bit of a softer appearance. I'm not always wearing black, you know, things like that. So I think it's a real complimentary tone, and I really appreciate the name, because it's more hugging somebody with a palm frond or something. I think it's nice.
But technically, when it comes to the eco-mortician end of the thing, and you know, the literally green mortician, eco-mortician, that you've just experienced by being out in the country and with families who've needed this, and it was already part of their lifestyle anyway. They already were. You spoke of one woman who already had most everything planned. I'm not sure if it was in this book or in your memoirs. And this book, again, is the Green Burial Guidebook, Everything You Need to Plan an Affordable, Environmentally Friendly Burial by Elizabeth Fournier, which is available around town, is it? What are the bookstores that are holding this?
It's around town. Bookstores, also online. There's a lot of wonderful indie sites, IndieBound and others, that have it too. And I always like to support the small community centers. I think that's wonderful, online or in person as well. To get to the point of what you said about the concept of helping people who have this idea, you know, we have so many choices, we have so many rights, and if you can do this environmental and also save money in your wallet, it seems like a really good concept. I mean, in Oregon, we grow our own herbs and veggies, and we recycle, and we volunteer. And that concept of, if you live a green lifestyle and you're conscious of the ecology and what's around you, then why not end the rest of your days, as well as hopefully your ever after, in more of a green, environmentally sound way? And there's many, many ways to do it. So I hope the book has a helpful tone, as well as, kind of like we touched about the goth, a non-goth tone. There can be a flippancy, or there can be something a little bit more cavalier sometimes, and I definitely want to just be open and loving, and I hope that that's what really how people do perceive the help.
I'm sure, and this definitely, the book does not come across that way. It's just when people hear about death cafes, I understand. A lot of people aren't prepared for what comes after. When you talk about the cement cases that are holding that, I mean, you might have lived your life in an entirely green style and been, you know, the Lord's own, you know, pristine person. But if your family doesn't know your wishes for your body afterwards, you could end up embalmed and becoming part of the problem. So I've lived this healthy life, but I didn't inform my family about how I wanted to be buried, and they're going to embalm me and all this other stuff. So it's important to start making plans. And that's where the Green Burial Guidebook is something you want to read before you think you're going to die, or, you know, your loved one or whatever. It's not something you want to pick up and read in the moment, and, you know, or to worry about, she wanted a certain sort of burial, but now it's too late because it's gone too long, or what have you. So for people who want to have a green burial but don't have the space in their own home, in their own yard, what do they do?
They can go to a cemetery. Many cemeteries, even here in Portland, within the city limits, will allow someone to be buried green. I probably should actually say, in case people don't know this, a green burial means someone is not embalmed. We don't have that embalmed body inside a metal or a lacquered or some sort of expensive casket, and we don't have that casket inside a concrete or a steel burial liner. So that's three levels of environmentalism we're trying to really hope can give back to the earth by not having those be a part of everything. We're getting rid of that, right? So there are cemeteries such as Riverview Cemetery, which is in Selwood, right off the Southwest Macadam area, will allow anybody at any grave whatsoever to have a natural burial. You can be buried in the sheet off your bed, a cardboard box, something wicker, a very simple pine casket. All of those are very eco-friendly, and those can be at any space within that cemetery. Also, Rose City Cemetery in Northeast, that's a very large property that's been around for a long time within the city limits over at 60th and Cully. They'll allow a green burial at any grave in their park. We have one out in Hillsboro. We have one out in Estacada. And then there's some other small cemeteries throughout the state of Oregon and also within Washington that will allow a natural burial, just meaning no concrete liner is needed to be buried in their cemetery. So therefore, that's the big start right there for a natural burial. Now it's up to you not to have your loved one embalmed and to think about more of an eco-friendly, sustainable casket.
What if I want to carry mom with me, or dad, or my puppy, or what have you, and I want to have a more green cremation? You talk about alternatives for that in your book. I don't want to get too much into it because there's a lot of information we just don't have the time here to give to you. The Green Burial Guidebook, Everything You Need to Plan an Affordable, Environmentally Friendly Burial. there are options cremation. And you actually get into the carbon footprint and the numbers, which we don't have to do now. But there is, and that's liquefaction. And is there somebody doing that in the state of Oregon now?
Yes, there's 12 states within the union that allow this and see this as a legal form of disposition, meaning a choice you can use to bury yourself with. You can use standard cremation or burial or natural burial, entombment, burial at sea, and then you can also use water cremation here in Oregon. There is somebody in Roseburg who has this machine, as well as right here in Portland.
Really? It's available here in town?
It's here in town.
And it's a couple hundred dollars more?
It's a couple hundred dollars more than a standard cremation. You would need to go through a funeral home. This isn't something a family could contract with this provider, with this machine.
Or my uncle has a bathtub in the back.
Yeah, same thing with green burial. People say, oh, well, you know, I have a backhoe and there's a national forest, and why can't I just make a grave that's unaccounted for? And well, because we have rules and we need to track people, and human remains actually matter to us because they belong to a person and hopefully someone with loved ones, so we do track these things. So this machine that they have, this, it takes the same amount of time as standard cremation. But it's like a water bath, really. The pressurized water really helps break down the tissue. The end product is ultimately standard cremains. It looks like the bone fragments, but been pulverized. So if you've been around during Mount St. Helens ash, that, or the sand on a beach, there's nothing really recognizable about it. But with the water cremation, those cremains, rather than a gray or a pinkish color, they come out much more of a white, because it's much more of a pure process. The neat thing is the water is a zero carbon footprint. The water can be given to people who have crops. You can actually drink it yourself. I don't know anybody who's done that or who really wants to try that.
I'm sure there will be somebody who want to make some punch. But one fellow was incorporated into his comic books. A gentleman who died, you know, decided to be part. And I love that, those ideas where they become something else. But the idea of having a hand in your own death, or, you know, having it all laid out for the people that are going to come take care of you, and death doulas, finding out from your book about death doulas, people who help in the time before and the time after. It could be the same person, but they're very different jobs, the time before death and the time just after death. But preparing, knowing, finding out things like I can take care of my own, you know, death certificate. My family can take care of the death certificate. Yeah. That I don't have to pay a third person, you know, an extra couple hundred bucks or whatever it is they're charging. And costs vary widely. And I've, just in my own personal experience, can see tens of thousands of dollars being spent needlessly just because someone saw some dollar signs or saw an opportunity to make some money. And it's a time, you know, everybody's different. They have those decisions and choices to make, and how they spend their money is one thing. But if you can plan in advance a green burial, and to have a guidebook like this that's friendly as well as well-researched and annotated, the fact that you, all the different people that you've spoken to, now you are, you say if you call the Boring Chamber of Commerce,
I answer the phone.
You answer the phone. So if you want to get a hold of Elizabeth and you just find a number for the Boring Chamber of Commerce, and
it's
and
me.
You'll know, you'll recognize her voice. Elizabeth did used to be a volunteer here. KBOO's 50 years old, and Elizabeth was editing the news when I was an underling, I guess, you know, a cohort as a producer, and it was fun. It was the old days, and so this is we're in a sort of a new part of the building, using all new equipment, nothing recognizable to what we used. We cut tape.
Yeah, reel-to-reel tape with splicing.
Razor
blade.
Yes. Would it be ecological to be wrapped in tape?
It's made out of plastic.
Yeah.
Oil-based.
So it just wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Maybe some copper or something like that. But lots of things I didn't know about the cement case. It was a very interesting book. And the fact that it applies to absolutely everybody, because we're all going to die.
And there's shades of green. You don't have to have a green burial. You don't have to keep your loved one at home. But maybe you can think about using recycled paper for your memorial folders. Maybe you can think about having more sustainable food at a reception. That's an idea. There's a lot of things that we can do there rather than have cut flowers. Maybe think about giving somebody a potted plant or a succulent, even better, that they don't have to use a lot of water for, that they can replant and have for many, many years to come. So there's shades of green, which I think is really important for people to really embrace.
Well, you get into so many different aspects of burial, you know, and the funeral and things like that, things that people don't think about necessarily, mm-hmm. you know, and in the before time, when people are dying, in order to know what their wishes are, and it's such a difficult thing for people to talk about. These death cafes, that's why they interest me, mm-hmm. just trying to make it more accessible or more relatable for people to accept the fact that we are going to die. In your other book, The Green Reaper, Memoirs of an Eco-Mortician, you talk about why you got into mortuary work, mm-hmm. and that was because your mother died when you were young, and you became the neighborhood mortician for pets and things like that.
My dad's parents live with us, and they died too, so all these people with Fournier as their last name, they were spending more time in caskets than they actually were doing other things, plus being in a small environment and being very involved in our local Catholic church. There was always a priest saying prayers for someone in the family, or there's always a nun visiting the home, or we were having a funeral or a rosary, and I was kind of a kooky little kid that way.
Well, it was your comfort space. It was your formative years. Just such an honest and real, you know, way to actualize all of the things that you've experienced, and here you are just taking it one step further. And I think this is something that could really change the way we do things. Green burial could change the way we do things. And people are still, the majority of people are still being buried in a traditional, quote-unquote traditional, embalmed kind of a way, if they are buried. Otherwise, they're cremated. Between the two, is it a dead heat for what is the most impactful to the environment? I mean, cremation has a huge carbon footprint, mm-hmm. but if you're embalmed and then you're in a cement case and you're in the, and with all the bells and whistles, well, no, I don't know. But the...
Yeah, there's a lot of materials that go into that. The studies show that annually we could rebuild the Golden Gate Bridge just with all the metal that we bury in the ground for caskets, which is super big to think about.
Huge. It is enormous.
Huge.
It's huge.
Yeah, think about the cars that go across that 24 hours a day. Think of how many times people put that on Instagram. It's huge. Yeah.
It is enormous. It is enormous, the environmental footprint that we're making. And if we could just be lowered in a sheet on a board into you know, someone's backyard somewhere, if not our own, then someone else's, or upright, as there are many mm-hmm. other ways.
Vertical burial. Yeah.
Vertical burials. And you do have sidebars and things like that with fun facts. And for someone like me, I wouldn't say I'm morbidly fascinated with these things. I just I have natural curiosity. I've had a lot of people die in my life. I'm a little bit more comfortable with it than a lot of other people are. But for the most part, you know, I'm an average person, and I still found this fascinating, the different death rituals and the things that you put in there. It just made it a fascinating read. And so even if you're not planning on dying, everybody, you could still get the Green Burial Guidebook and still find some enjoyment from that. Or if you're not planning on, screw it, I'll be dead. I don't care what happens to my body. But the waste that comes from the embalming and coming into the watershed mm-hmm. is now becoming a big, hairy deal. When I used to work and I would travel across town and I traveled by the McDonald's in the morning, it had a certain smell. And then later on in the day, I had to, my travels took me past the burn day mm-hmm. on the Mortuary Hill there where Riverside, I guess, is and all those are. And I noticed later that when I went by the sewage treatment plant, and it was all the same smell: McDonald's in the morning, the mortuaries over there on Terwilliger, and the sewage treatment plants out in Westland. They all kind of had that same,
not very delicious,
not quite yeah. right smell. I have a feeling that green burial, things would just be a whole lot better. I mean, we have to undo a lot of the damage now.
Yeah, the ecological structure and the progression of the funeral industry has really been more of the regression of the environment. If we could lay somebody to rest in some sort of a biodegradable container 4 feet down into the soil, think about the juicy goodness inside you going out and just the permaculture and all those wonderful things, the fungi and the, the aeration, everything inside there, the spores, the mold, everything wants to mix with you and really wants to welcome you in its gentle embrace. And why not be a tree if you could be, right?
I think that's a good place to end as any,
mm-hmm.
to be a tree or maybe a book. The Green Burial Guidebook, everything you need to plan an affordable, environmentally friendly burial. Elizabeth Fournier, thank you for joining us to talk about this under-talked about subject.
You're always my pleasure to speak with. Thank you very much.
KBOO Community Radio is 50. We are celebrating our birthday with a big street fair and party on August 11th from noon to 10 p.m. here at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, Oregon.
We'll be broadcasting live bands all day and have an open house celebrating 50 years of KBOO.
There will be a reunion from 2 to 5 during the street party for folks looking to see KBOO volunteers from other eras.
So save the date, Saturday, August 11th, to celebrate the 50 years of KBOO with your community radio station. KBOO Portland.
KBOO hosts a monthly film series called KBOO at the Clinton, hosted by the Clinton Street Theater. This month, we'll screen the film Undocumented on Thursday, August 9th at 7 p.m. Undocumented is a documentary about a 13-year-old who travels from Colombia to join his parents in America and his life becoming a surgeon. It is a story of struggle, loss, danger, courage, and love. Again, that's a film screening of Undocumented, Thursday, August 9th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Esto es Tania Gómez Daza para KBOO News. A continuación, un corte informativo en español para el día 31 de julio. La jueza federal Dolly Gee ordenó a la administración de Trump que transfiera a todos los niños fuera del centro de tratamiento residencial Silo en Manvel, Texas. Esto debido a denuncias de abuso generalizado en el centro de detención de inmigrantes. La jueza condenó al centro de detención por inyectar a los niños drogas psicotrópicas sin el consentimiento de sus padres, encarcelar a algunos niños en un encierro excesivamente restrictivo y prohibir que los niños realicen llamadas privadas. También ordenó explícitamente que el centro de detención debe obtener el permiso de un tutor legal antes de administrar cualquier medicamento psicotrópico a los niños detenidos. Un total de 200 inmigrantes murieron en lo que va de este año al intentar cruzar la frontera entre México y Estados Unidos, una cifra ligeramente menor a la